We'll have the Marshall reconvene court.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is back in session. Judge Frisch, Judge Riley, Judge Flory, the Honorable Jennifer L. Frisch presiding.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is March 24, 2021. We are here for our second of three oral matters on the calendar. This is A20-1390 in the matter of the welfare of the children of KES, MWC, and TJS. Council, you'll see that the marshal is showing a running clock of your time. Each of you will have 15 minutes for your primary argument. The appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use that. Please identify yourself before you begin speaking because this matter is being recorded. If you are not speaking, I ask that you mute your microphone. It helps to keep the background noise to a minimum. And with that, counsel, whenever you're ready, you may proceed.
Well, thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel, my name is Michael Schatz. I am the attorney for appellant. And can you guys hear me okay, first of all? All right, I'm seeing some head nodding. Thank you very much. And the clock has not started, but I'm going to continue talking anyway. There's two issues in this appeal. The first is whether or not the continuance or the denial of the continuance of the trial was appropriate due to mother, my client, the appellant, now no longer having representation in the case. And there's several factors that play into that, which I'll discuss. The second issue is kind of more legal, more substantive, which is whether or not the trial court erred in not allowing anybody to be present for the children's testimony for children, besides the court, the judge, I should say, and the guardian ad litem. And I believe that's a very strong issue, which does demand that the case be remanded back to district court for retrial. So I'm going to start with what I think.
But there was no objection to before the district court to the manner in which the testimony was taken from the children. True?
I don't believe that's accurate, Your Honor. I was not the trial court attorney. I was assigned afterwards, but I recall that this issue was brought up several times.
Did mom object?
I don't believe mother did object, Your Honor. I think it was objected to by counsel for the children. He said that the children wanted to testify in person in front of everybody. At least for two of the children.
I don't think that's what the record said. Child one may have wanted to do it in person in front of mom, which leads me to a question I have for you. I'm just trying to figure out what remedy you're seeking with regard to child one, since your client's rights weren't terminated and there's an ongoing CHIPS proceeding. And so I'm just not sure what you want the court to do with regard to child one.
That's a great question, Your Honor. I don't think there's an actual remedy for child one. However, I do think whether or not her rights were violated and whether or not the proper procedure was implemented at the trial factors into the rest of the children. And for the rest of the children, I'm asking for a retrial.
But I don't know that your client has standing to argue about the procedural rights of child one, who was a party and had her own attorney representing her.
Is Your Honor referring to when I said that child one's trial rights were violated?
Yes, that was one of your points in your brief.
I understand that. Yep, Your Honor. I think it goes to the overall errors in the court, whether or not the children's rights were also violated.
So let me ask you this. In reading the transcript of the, I guess you would call it in camera almost, testimony of the three other children. It was very general. And what they said was the same thing that the Guardian reported and any number of other people. There wasn't anything surprising in their very general testimony because it's what all of the other people involved in the case reported that the children wanted. They didn't say any salacious things against their mother.
Right. Oh, so my comment to that, Your Honor, would be, it's not what they said, it's what they didn't say. I think there's a lot of information that could and should have been brought to light, which could have happened if they were subject to essentially cross-examination or some form of questioning at all.
Well, let me ask you this, in light of what their therapist wrote about the trauma that the children had experienced in your client's care or lack thereof, and the fact that at trial they could be subjected to being re-traumatized by cross-examination, it seems to me that the judge wanted the children to have a voice, but also weighed that against their best interests, especially with regard to their mental health and well-being.
So two things there, Your Honor, and I appreciate those comments. One is that more generally, the children have a right to testify if they want. And again, that goes to whether or not their rights were violated. And I understand your concerns there.
Well, but they said that other than the child one, the other three said that they didn't want to testify in front of their mother. They didn't want to testify in open court.
This goes beyond just testifying in open court in front of mother. I acknowledge that the court can take alternate forms of testimony. That's clear from the statutes. But if that's going to happen, there's several requirements that must take place. One, I think the children have to agree to that because they have a right to testify. But more importantly,
well, they did agree to it through their counsel.
At the pretrial, child two, initial start with L, stated at page 39 of the July 15th, 2020 testimony, he said explicitly, I want to testify. I want to be there for the entire court proceeding. Two pages later at trial transcript 41, his attorney said on his behalf that they want to be home with mother. Both want to testify in person. They want to testify in front of everybody, including mother.
But apparently that changed by the time of the actual trial. At least that's my reading of the transcript and the record.
Thank you, Your Honor. This again goes to the point that there should have been more questioning in regards to these children, not just very general, as you indicated, very general statements, which don't provide any light on any of the substantive issues in this case, which are the heart of the matter. What was happening with mom? What sort of abuse or neglect took place? Who caused it? All those things which were not explored.
Mr. Schatz, did your client file a motion requesting a new trial, assigning error to the method by which the trial court directed that testimony would be taken from the children?
No, Your Honor, she did not. I think that's a great point to bring up because this was just a mess from the start and regarding the appellate process. As Your Honors are probably aware from reviewing this appellate file, we didn't even technically get the appeal in on time because mother appellant was not getting notice of the findings because she had terminated her attorney and the findings went to the attorney. Then by the time a new attorney myself got assigned, the appellate time had run. So in order to do a new trial, we have to do that within 10 days of the order. I wasn't even assigned until after the 20-day appellate period had ran. And so we then tried to get the appeal done. The court very graciously allowed us to extend the deadline for the appeal. So no, a new trial motion wasn't done, but I think there are certainly good reasons why that wasn't done through no fault of my client whatsoever. Does that answer your question, Your Honor?
Well, it does answer my question. It leaks into the issue of her firing her lawyer, because it seems to me that that was directly related to her inability to file a motion for a new trial. She chose to be unrepresented when she filed her lawyer. We can deal with whether or not the court abused its discretion by not granting a continuance. That's a separate issue. But, you know, I'm not sure I agree with the assessment that it was through no fault of your client, because she did make a choice to not be represented.
Well, Your Honor, two points there, and I appreciate you bringing that up. One is, when I said no fault, I meant court administration essentially sent stuff to the wrong person, so she didn't get notice. I think that's identified in the record pretty well, so I'm not going to go into it too far. So that's what I meant, no fault of her own.
Okay.
In regards to her finding her attorney, I know the ad attorney. I don't think he's a bad attorney at all, but when I read the transcript from the July 30th pretrial hearing, he essentially says, and I'm going to paraphrase here, Well, I haven't reviewed the evidence because, you know, there's a lot of it and I got better things to do. And, you know, I don't review things until right before trial. He indicates that he'd only reviewed at the time, 3 days before trial, at the pretrial, 600 pages of the 1900 pages of discovery, but that he would over the weekend. And he said he hadn't returned any of the client's calls and there was other things that were identified by my client. So in terms of her discharging her attorney, I don't think it was an unreasonable request to seek a new attorney at that point because of the fact that she felt he was not representing her adequately. Whether or not, you know, that's the truth of the matter, I won't go into. I don't like to disparage other attorneys, but her ending that relationship, I think, is supported by the record as it's laid out at that pretrial hearing on July 30th.
Mr. Schatz, this is kind of neither here nor there, but I was struck by how compassionate the district court was in her comments about your client being courageous and intelligent and all kinds of things.
I was too. In terms of the wording of that order, I was very impressed by it. I think it's one of the best written orders I've seen in a long time, if not ever. I disagree with some of the pretrial rulings for which she was not mostly part of. Judge Duncan, who's the trial court attorney, was only placed on the calendar the day of trial, or at least the weekend of trial, after Judge Torino, who made all the pretrial rulings, recused herself due to the fact that she had a conflict of interest. So maybe not here nor there, but yes, the findings were impressive. I don't think that changes the fact that the children should have been able to testify, which I think is the main issue in this appeal. The statutory requirements are clear that, as I move around these piles and piles of transcripts, that the statutes under 260C.163, subdivision 6, 7, 8, and 10, which is regard to the child's right to testify, those are clear. I don't think there can be any question as to the intent there. While subdivision 6 says there could be alternate methods, even if that's going to take place, there has to be explicit reasoning why. I don't believe that's been complied with in this case. There's vague references to a therapist letter. Those are not identified any substantive findings in the findings or on the trial record. Even at the trial, there's references to letters from a therapist. Those are not explained what it says besides, well, it could be detrimental to the children.
Well, except I've read those letters. I mean, they're in the record and the judge obviously had read them.
But they're not part of the findings, the findings need to be clear. I guess the Court of Appeals could do an independent review to see if it's a prejudicial error. If there's an error, which I believe there is, it must be prejudicial, which I think is one of the points respondent makes that, well, it wouldn't have made a difference anyway. But in terms of the findings, the district court must make in order to get to alternative means of testimony under subdivision 6, there's no findings related to that. It just says, well, we're going to do it with the guardian ad litem present only, end of case. And that's not appropriate under, I think it's Rosenfield. I've cited it in my brief, as well as the statutes. Further, even if there's going to be alternate means of testimony, the parties still need an opportunity to, and I'll use the word cross-examine, although I don't think that's the appropriate phrasing, to question, to present questions, to do something. And they were not given that opportunity in this case. That's subdivision 7. The attorney has the right to continue to participate in the proceedings in the absence of the party, in this case, the mother, and the parents have, under subdivision 8, the right to cross-examine any and all witnesses. The children were witnesses in this case.
I understand it gets back to some of the original questions with regard to there was no objection, and as early as February orders, they were talking about how the children were not going to testify in the presence of other people. And there is no motion for a new trial.
I don't have a lot to say about the new trial issue, Your Honors. I think that was sort of outside of my client's control. I will say this, though. Even when it was discussed about the children not testifying in front of mother, it was anticipated that the attorneys or somebody would be present for that. Exhibit from the order. I'm sorry.
I saw that also, that the attorneys would be present. But then, of course, when mother fired her attorney, not only wasn't an attorney present for her, but for no one else either, including the children's attorney, as I understand it.
Correct. And so I think that's an error that needs to be addressed as well, because it was anticipated the attorneys would be present. That's identified in the transcript of the pretrial hearings. I don't seem to find my note about it right here, but I recall seeing it, and I can maybe bring it up during my rebuttal. But also, I think that goes to the weight of whether or not a continuance should be granted. It was known that mother was not going to be allowed to be present for the children's testimony. The children's testimony is crucial in this case. They are of sufficient age and maturity to testify, being over the age of 10. And so whether or not mother would be allowed to be present for this crucial testimony should go to the weight of whether a continuance should be granted. I think a continuance should have been granted because it was already delayed, I think, four other times, once by agreement of all parties, once because of the discharge of attorney, which my client did not want him discharged, and he had no recollection of the events, once due to the vacation plans of other counsel, and once because of the pandemic. So in terms of the urgency, a short continuance to allow mother to seek new counsel was very appropriate. That was denied, and that's one of our issues.
As I understand it, though, the judge was concerned and heard from the guardian and foster parents that the children were decompensating. And when they thought they were going to be, there's going to be a trial, and then it got postponed, and that was really impacting their mental health.
I recall that with regards to child two, he was stressed out, I believe is what his attorney said, about being present for the hearings. But he also did, prior to that, say that he wanted to be present. He wanted to be able to testify in front of mother, things of that nature. So again, there's conflicting testimony there. I see that my time is up. Thank you for your time, Your Honors.
All right, thank you, counsel. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Ms. Church, anytime you're ready.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Rebecca Church. I'm a Winona County Assistant County Attorney, and I represent the respondent in this case, Winona County Health and Human Services. As noted by Appellate's counsel, there's really two issues that are argued in their brief. One regarding how the children testified, and regarding the continuance request. As I noted in my brief, obviously I disagree with both of those, and I believe this court should affirm the district court's order. As this court is well aware, the most important thing in any trial and any regarding child protection is the best interests of the children. And the court throughout this case continued to look at the best interests of the children. And that was clearly laid out in the orders and in the transcripts. And the best interest of the children is not only to be in the final determination, but in all parts throughout the case. And Your Honor, that's what the court did here. That's what Judge Beitendorf, Judge Storino, and Judge Duncan did. We can obviously agree this wasn't the most ideal timeline and the most ideal process. Obviously, it's not the most ideal to have several judges hearing this case. It's not the most ideal to have it continued several times. However, as far as mom asking for a continuance 2 business days before the trial and then on the morning of trial is very different than the continuances that happened before. The children were ready and prepared to testify, and when mom asked the day of trial, it would have decompensated them even more, as clearly noted by several parties, including the guardian ad litem. Additionally, the mother was told very clearly, if you discharge your attorney 2 days before this trial, the court is not going to agree to a continuance. The court is not going to appoint you a new attorney. Those discussions were clearly had throughout the pretrial, throughout that hearing, before the mom was ultimately made to make a decision regarding the case. I believe that Judge Storino did a very good job at trying to talk with mom regarding what her options were. Mom was assigned a very skilled attorney. He has a lot of experience. I do believe that is said in the order. He has been doing this for many, many more years than I am. So the fact that he was going to prepare over the weekend, I don't think should be held against him. I prepare over the weekend. We all have to rearrange our schedule as is. So I don't think that is a reason to discharge her attorney. She liked her past attorney better, I think is what it came down to. Regarding the children's testimony.
I have a question for you there. Do you think the judge had the authority to take the testimony outside of everyone's presence except for the guardian ad litem? And if you think that, point to the authority for that belief of yours, because it seems when I read the statute, specifically the one that Mr. Schatz cited to 260C.163, that it presumes that either mom or that she would be represented and that there would have been attorneys listening to the testimony.
So Your Honor, I do think that under that statute is where the court has authority to take informal testimony. And it was originally—
Could you please point me to the subdivision that you are referring to?
Yes, Your Honor. Let me pull it up. I do believe it's subdivision 6. Your Honor, I apologize for not having it up on my screen. I should have done that during counsel's.
It says that it's you can take informal, but court may also require counsel to submit questions to the court before the child's testimony is taken and to submit additional questions to the court after the questioning has been completed.
Yes, Your Honor, and respectfully, the county believes that is what happened. I read that as an options. Here are some different options that can be had. Here are some different options you can do to give examples of what can happen, but that the court has great discretion on what that looks like on every given unique case.
Except subdivision 7, the final sentence there says the attorney or guardian ad litem, if any, has a right to continue to participate in the proceedings. Well, I don't know. So.
Your Honor, my argument to that is mother didn't have an attorney. Mother discharged her attorney. It was back since February. In February, there was an agreement that the children would testify outside the presence of mother. That was agreed upon actually by mother's attorney, by the child's attorney, by the guardian ad litem, by myself. Everybody was in agreement to that. And that continued to essentially be the agreement almost up until mom discharged her attorney. And then I think the court looked at what is the most fair, how can we handle mom not having an attorney in the most fair manner? It's not fair that mom's unrepresented. So, and she's not there, but yet I could be there. That doesn't seem like a fair balance. And in my mind, the court did what they could balance the best interests of the children, still be fair to all parties. At no time did mother say, I would like to ask these children this. Did she say during her testimony or during questioning or during breakout or any point, did she say the child is going, I want the child to be asked this, that she did not ask to call the child? Your Honor, I do think that there is a distinction in this case versus an unpublished case where the court did remand to have the child testify. In that case, the court, and for the record, that is, it's unpublished, but it's 2018 WL5915447 in the matter of the welfare of QSM. I'm sure Mr. Schatz is familiar with that case as he argued it. So in that case, the child was not allowed to testify. Mom asked for the child to testify. Mom said the child will say this. In this particular case, mom had no testimony or evidence that the children would say anything different, that they had information. Mr. Schatz argues that they should have been cross-examined. And if there was a question for them, I think that would be another matter, but nobody presented that they wanted questions asked. There was no objection at any time regarding this process. There was no argument about that they should be asked other questions. So in my mind, there was the opportunity to cross-examine. They could have said, okay, after we heard Judge Duncan relay it, well, I would like to follow up with this. They could have asked the guardian ad litem, I'd like to follow up with this. They asked to recall them on their case in chief and presented what evidence, but there's nothing that the children had to say that would contradict what they did say, because child one actually said quite a bit of information. She was basically asked, what do you want to tell the court? And child one presented a lot of testimony about what she wanted the court to know. But again, there was no follow-up. Additionally, there was no motion for new trial. As noted, Mrs. Schott argues, well, that's not her fault. She fired her attorney. And as a, even if you're pro se, you are still expected to follow the rules of decorum and to follow through. She did make a motion to the court afterwards that she wanted an attorney appointed, that she wanted to appeal the case. She could have, and so she knew how to make motions. At that time, there could have been a motion for a new trial, even outside the timelines, and argued, I was just appointed. Here's the conundrum about this case, but there was no attempts at that. So Your Honor, I do believe it is moot because I don't believe anything. There was no objection and no motion for new trial. I don't believe there was error because the court did what was in the best interest of the children. And well, clearly—
Well, Ms. Church, Mr. Schatz argued that, I think he acknowledged in his argument that the court did have discretion to allow an alternate form of testimony. But the problem is the court made no findings indicating what it relied on in the exercise of that discretion. You agree that findings were lacking? And if so, how does an appellate court review that exercise of discretion under these circumstances?
I obviously there are, to the best of my recollection, no findings, written findings. However, the court, I do believe, made oral findings on the record. Additionally, the court can review the record on its own independently, and there is definitely findings there. There is therapist testimony, there's foster care testimony, there are letters from the therapist, there is the guardian ad litem, the caseworker, essentially anybody that had touched these kids' lives could reiterate to you the trauma they've been through. To re-traumatize them would not be appropriate. To put them in a position to kind of pit them against their mom was not appropriate. Essentially what the court did was allow them to have a voice if they wanted to. They didn't even have to testify. There was question if one of the children was going to testify or not, if he was comfortable with that, but the county sees it as more of a position where the court was allowing them to have their voice. But there's overwhelming evidence to support the court's decision, even if you take away the information, their limited testimony. And again, when it comes down to best interest, it would have been incredibly re-traumatizing to have some vigorous cross-examination by multiple people in a courtroom. And as also, as Your Honor noted, there's only one, only child one is the one that was asking for that. All the other children are not asking for that. They were asking to not testify in front of mother, to testify via Zoom. So the court was following their wishes as well as recommendations by their therapist. And as noted, child one is currently in the middle of a CHIPS case. So I don't know what other remedy is being sought, as I actually noted in my brief. I don't know what he's arguing. So I feel you have to take away any argument regarding child one because there's no remedy. If for example, the court wouldn't have terminated any of the children's rights, to the best of my knowledge, mother couldn't appeal. So I don't know how she, again, what remedy is being sought because we're in the middle of a CHIPS case right now. But I think that this case is very clear. I think the record is very clear. The judge continually looked out for the best interests of the children. Mother made decisions, knowledgeable decisions. Mother was given plenty of opportunity to reconsider her decisions. And she did not. She had the opportunity to file a motion for a new trial. She did essentially learn how to file things throughout the trial. She did. She called witnesses. She cross-examined. So if she had questions regarding, well, I wanted the child to, you know, to hear about this, she had the ability to do that. And I think the judge laid out in her order that information as well, that mother was doing the best she could and asking appropriate questions. So, Your Honor, I think the record is clear. This was in the best interest of the children to take informal testimony. However, I don't think it's properly before the court because there was no objection. In fact, it was agreed to in the beginning. And then throughout the case, there was no objection by mother, either through her attorney or through herself. Even if the court wants to review it, it was not error. And even if the court finds it was error, it definitely was not prejudicial. It would not have changed the case if they were cross-examined further, or if they testified differently. There's overwhelming evidence to support the district court, the trial court's decision. Additionally, regarding the continuance, a last minute continuance request because of mother's choices is not appropriate. Again, not in the best interest of the children. The children were prepared to testify. The children knew what was happening, and they needed finalization. And there is case law that supports that ultimately is what the court looks at. There has been other court of appeals cases that said that the district court properly upheld was appropriate in denying parents continuations, because first and foremost, you look at what is in the best interest of the children. And even though, unfortunately, this case was delayed several months, at some point they needed finalization and they needed this to be done. So Your Honor, I am asking you to affirm the trial court's order in full. And if there are no other questions for me, I would yield the rest of my time.
Are there any other questions from the panel? All right, thank you very much, counsel. Counsel, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to address a few brief points. First, I noted in my 15 minutes that there was a point where the court said, the judge said that even if mother wasn't present, that the attorneys would be, just for the court's direction. That's at the July 15th hearing at page 21 of the transcript. The top of the page there, it does say, even if mom's not going to be a part of it, an attorney would be. So I think that was something that was considered. And I think that would maybe comply with the statutes that say attorneys need to be present, but obviously that didn't happen. There's an argument that, well, we had to kind of modify the decision of whether anybody was going to be present, the county attorney, the attorney for the children, because now mother doesn't have an attorney and it would be unfair to her. That decision was made far before the decision to terminate her appellant's counsel was made. So that's a false statement, or at least it's an untrue statement, I should say. That decision was made well in advance and should not be relied on. In regards to this last minute continuance, it was made 2 days, or I guess at the pretrial right before the trial, because she didn't have the ability at that point. She had an attorney. She can't contact the court directly. The attorney made clear that she had requested a continuance over 2 weeks in advance, but her attorney refused to bring that to the court. So in terms of whether or not it was a last minute continuance, well, yes, it was, but also it wasn't. And I think that also goes to whether or not she had a substantial basis to terminate her attorney, because he was refusing to make requests on her behalf because he didn't agree with them. This doesn't relate to trial strategy. It doesn't relate to things that the attorney would normally do. If a continuance is requested, it should be requested. Lastly, yes, the kids need permanency. That's certainly understandable. I don't think any judge would ever say that's not true. But another month of continuing this out wouldn't have been very prejudicial to the children, because it had been postponed 4 times already. The children have been out of home for a substantial period of time, well beyond the 60-day trial window we normally have in a TPR proceeding. There wasn't a prior CHIPS proceeding where they've been out of home for years and years. This went directly to TPR. So a short continuance to allow mother to get an attorney, I think, would have been appropriate. I think was prejudicial. I just want to address regarding children's testimony, sort of the outline we have here, because we've been bouncing all over the place. So essentially, we've got to start. There's at least 5 steps here. One, is ultimate testimony permitted? Yes, in certain forms it is. But if that's going to be done, there has to be explicit findings as to why. And then even if it's allowed, we still have the statutory requirements that the attorneys be allowed to cross-examine witnesses. The attorneys are allowed to be present. So even if we get to alternate methods, which I don't think we did in this case because there was no findings, even if that's the case, we still have to get to whether or not the statutory requirements were complied with, which they clearly weren't. Then after that, we have to get to whether or not it was prejudicial. In this case, the argument is, well, none of the children's testimony varied substantially from other information we heard. Yeah, that's the point. The point is that we don't know what the children were going to say. For example, child number 2, 30 days before trial, was saying, I want to go home to mom. I want to go home to mom. I want to testify in trial, and then change his mind. Do we know why? No, nobody knows why, because nobody asked that question. That's just one example of many of things that could have and should have been asked if the trial rights of my client had been complied with. And yet now we don't know. And I think that's a substantial basis because he is the second oldest child. He's got the second most experience. He has the second most to say about everything that happened in the lives of all the children. And so that should be things that should be explored. Also, child one, while there's no remedy for her, perhaps her not being able to testify fully impacted the other six children. Because again, she's got the most experience. She's lived the most time with mother. She can say the most about what happened and when and who did it and why. And yet that wasn't explored. So these broad questions that were done in only in front of the judge and only in front of the guardian ad litem are wholly insufficient to comply with the statutory requirements under 260C.163 of several of the statutes, subdivision 7, subdivision 8, subdivision 10. If those aren't complied with, this case must be remanded. That's sort of the Cliff Notes version of the argument. There really is no, well, but this, but that. It's just those rights were violated. It was prejudicial. It must be remanded. I have 15 seconds left. I don't think I'll be able to say anything substantial in the next. So unless there's any questions for me, I just thank you all for your time.
Thank you. Any other questions? All right. Thank you, counsel. The matter is submitted. We will submit, or we will issue an opinion within the statutory time period, and we'll stand in recess until our next case. Thank you very much.